Bell, Bucky Jacobson, Matt Michaelis with you here on a Monday following the first game of the season. A 38-25 Seahawks win over the Atlanta Falcons on the road in front of a screaming crowd of four. 12th man news at 7 with Greg Bell is now coming your way, and it's brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. The beautiful brand new Emerald Queen Casino located on I-5 in Tacoma is open. Check it out. All right, Greg. So what was the experience like? I mean, this is a once in a career kind of situation here, Greg. The entire thing, no fans, going on the road, pandemic, you know, leaving your family when there's smoke on the, you know, throughout the Pacific Northwest. I mean, try to nutshell it for us if you can. What was just the entire experience of going to Atlanta and coming home like for you as a professional?
It was surreal. It really was. I mean, it started at the team hotel. It was this big. I mean, this guy was as big as Dwayne Brown, making people leave the hotel if they didn't have masks on. Wouldn't let them in unless you wore a mask. And Georgia was more masked up, at least Atlanta was more masked up than I thought it would be, honestly. And most places were very restricted. I dropped by a Trader Joe's to pick up snacks, and the Trader Joe's made you take a shopping cart, even though I was picking up two things. I said, well, I don't need a cart. He says, well, no, we want everyone to have a cart for social distancing and keep space between shoppers. And I thought, that was interesting. They don't do that in Seattle. That stuff like that. And then you get to the game. I mean, the drive into the game, it was like driving in the countryside in downtown Atlanta. The Seahawks had a couple buses at the Atlanta police escort it did not need. The police just drove right straight through without, you know, they weren't stopping traffic or red lights or anything. And outside the stadium was completely empty. Usually that stadium, I've been there, and 77,000 people are teeming all over the place, and none of that. Had to get scanned and answer questions and thermometer testing outside the stadium to get in, and then you get in and there's no one in there. It struck you like, what are we doing here? Should we be doing this? And I kept thinking, even on the flight home last night, 5 hours in a metal tube during a pandemic is an interesting experience as well. But during that ride home, I kept thinking a lot about what Pete Carroll said after the game. He was going crazy about Russell Wilson, of course, and Jamal Adams and how well they played and the energy they created for themselves and the offense being looking very prolific. But at the end of it all, he said, you know, we won't know how successful this trip was till we get home and we get these COVID tests back the next few days. And ain't that the truth? And that's the reality here of this is all well and good on Monday morning. Let's see where they are on Thursday and Friday after three or four more COVID tests to see if this all they could pull this off without any positive tests. So, and they're going to do it all again in a couple weeks to Miami, which is even crazier of a spot to go during a pandemic. Yeah, Michael Sean Dugar, The Athletic, and I were the only two Seattle media of any kind, radio, TV, print, that were at the game. And there were maybe 20 people in the press box.
Wow.
Gee, what was your big takeaway from this thing? The way in which the offense kind of went out in attack mode and looked different in the way that they did try to attack, or the fact that they gave up over 500 yards on offense and still ended up pulling out a W?
Well, Bucky, two things. One is this what was yesterday? Is this a sign of how the offense is going to be the rest of the season? Are they really going to let Russ cook? That was after we all said cook after the game. That was the big joke about it after the game. Was this just a one-off because of Atlanta? Atlanta's defense is good up front. Grady Jarrett was very good again, but they're not very good in the back. And they have holes in the secondary and pass cover. You saw that yesterday. So was this just Schottenheimer and Carroll's game plan for Atlanta? Or is this what they're going to be doing? And this is eight passes in the first 11 plays, 28 pass calls in the first 38 plays. That's if you count the lateral with David Moore that was probably supposed to be a pass, and it was thrown laterally, so it was counted statistically as a run. And then two sacks by Russell Wilson. They called, Schottenheimer called 28 passes in the first 38 plays. Is that the way this is going to be, or was it Atlanta? And when I asked afterwards, nobody would answer that clearly. But Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll both said this was a product of their offseason. And Carroll went on again, as he said throughout the summer, he really thinks they got ahead. He's always competing about everything. He thinks they won the Zoom competition. And that might sound funny, like it doesn't matter. But the install of the offense and the stuff they got done in May and June with the Greg Olsons and new people to the Brandon Schell and Damian Lewis, those guys and the progress they made without even stepping on the field, Carroll and Russell Wilson think that's why they were that good offensively. Now, they still had some issues, and they had pass protection issues early in the game. I thought Brandon Schell at right tackle did not play nearly as well as he looked in training camp. He struggled at right tackle. Now, defensively, it seemed to me that if they didn't blitz Jamal Adams or blitz in general, they weren't stopping the Falcons. It was getting to the point where they had to blitz to have a chance to pressure Ryan and get the ball out. Ryan threw for 450 yards. That's the third highest total ever against this team. It was alarming that they couldn't get pressure up front. The only two times I noticed, well, three times, the front four getting pressure and the 50-plus passes that Atlanta threw, the two fourth down plays by Benson Mayower that were huge, of course, batting down the pass and the sack on Ryan, and then L.J. Collier getting in and making his most disruptive play in two seasons. That was it. If they didn't blitz Jamal Adams or Blair or Bobby Wagner, they did not affect the Falcons' offense at all. And that's a big, big concern. And I asked Carroll after the game, are you getting to the point already that you just should thinking about blitzing Jamal Adams on every down? And he laughed and said, well, I don't know if we can get away with that. I never thought of that. But they need an alternative that's better than that to pressure quarterbacks.
Greg Bell is with us, our Seahawks insider, following yesterday's 38-25 win for the Seahawks in Atlanta to start this 2020 season. And boy, you gave me like a million different jumping off points. So I'm just going to go focus back on what I think was the lead story yesterday, and that was the play of Jamal Adams just absolutely disrupting everything, particularly in the first half, Greg. I mean, I wrote a note at one point in my scribblings, he's made every play. And that's obviously hyperbole, but I wrote at one point in the second quarter that he's made every play defensively for this team. Talk about what what kind of impact Jamal Adams, the kind of first impression that he made on coaching staff, teammates, fans, everything.
I think the Seahawks were surprised that he was better than they thought he'd be and more impacting. He seemed and felt to make the entire defense faster. They picked up on his energy. Yesterday was a game where energy mattered because you had to create your own. There was none. There were a pocket of maybe 10 fans that looked like Seahawks family members. I don't know how they got in, but they were sitting in the loge mid-level down to my left, and that was it. And you could hear them. You could hear Pete Carroll screaming and hooting and hollering. I talked to him after, I teased him after the game about that. But you really did have to manufacture the energy, and it seemed like Jamal Adams did it single-handedly for the whole team, for 55 dudes, one guy. Very intense. It reminds me of Earl Thomas in that way. But he was everywhere. At one point in the second quarter, he missed a tackle near the goal line inside the 10-yard line after a tight end made a catch in front of him. And I thought he was going to slam his head into the goalpost. He was so mad. He's grabbing his helmet and kicking around. You're right. He made every other play up to that point. A couple things. One, he's trying to make a solid impression, of course. Two, this is just how he plays. And three, he knows he's on an audition. He wants to be the highest paid safety in football. And he just saw what Buda Baker got. And he knows what the stakes are for him. And he played like it. And I know from watching film on him, he plays like that all the time. But he's got a new suitor, a new team that he's trying to woo for maybe $18-20 million a year by next year. He wants to do he'd drive the bus and fly the plane home if they let him, because that's what he's trying to do right now. And it'll be very, very, very good for this defense if he can sustain that over 16 games. I would blitz him all the time. I really would. I'd say, Quandre Diggs, you're going to have to man the middle of the defense, the middle third of this field, because we're sending Quandre Diggs, or we're sending Jamal Adams in on every play. Right now with this defense, I would send him almost every play.
That'd be fun to watch. All right, G, yesterday, different scenario or different usage of Chris Carson, obviously. I mean, only getting the ball six times as far as a runner goes, but also catching six passes. Is that something because of all the time that he missed? Is that something because you think they're just trying to keep him healthy for the long haul, or is that just a byproduct of Russ cooking, so to speak?
Bucky, I thought Brian Schottenheimer and Carroll made a concerted effort to get Carson away from Atlanta's linebackers and play outside away from and go against their cornerbacks. I mean, at one point, they do this a lot in practice, they were splitting Carson out pre-snap motion and having him basically as a wide receiver, as the furthest left guy out there on way even further outside Metcalf or Lockett, and they threw to him that way. So in previous years, and in all of Carson's career, those would be stretch handoffs or toss sweeps. Well, yesterday, those are passes. So they essentially were runs, how short some of those throws were. But they wanted to get Carson in the open field so that the Atlanta speed at linebacker and the inside guys, he could be away from and give them a head start out there. And heck, they ran three screen passes. We've seen seasons the Seahawks have ever had three screen passes. One of them went for a touchdown, a 19-yard one. He had five blockers in front of him and nobody out there. So I think it was a spatial thing. That I was sitting in the end zone. The modern NFL press boxes now are all in the end zone because the bigwigs get to sit in the suites and the sideline. So it was an interesting perspective to watch the screen passes from the end zone and seeing, and just the passes outside in general. It just seemed to me they were extended sweeps. Now, that doesn't explain all the other throws he made, 35 of them, completing 31, but for the Carson one, especially early in the game, it was a concerted effort to get him outside. He had as many receiving touchdowns in one quarter than he had all last season. Ended up with four of the first eight completions were to Carson, all of them on quick ones outside. So I think that was something of an anomaly, though they always talk about how good Carson's hands are.
Well, if this is the year that Russell Wilson enters a season as strong an MVP candidate as he's ever been, I would say he's off to a good start. What was the reaction, staff and teammates, to how well Russell played yesterday?
Well, the funniest reaction was Jamal Adams when we asked him how nice it was to watch Wilson. He said, "I'm not used to this. I've had Sam Darnold for the last couple of years in the New York Jets." So he thought it was pretty nice to go to the sideline and kick back for about 10 minutes instead of having to keep his helmet on and go right back on the field after three offensive plays. He appreciated that. The rest of the Seahawks have come to expect this, quite honestly, especially on the road. He's the highest-rated road passer in NFL history. He threw what was 143.1 yesterday. It was his highest completion percentage ever, 88.6. And the Seahawks are like, yeah, that's kind of what he does. Greg Olsen, another newcomer, of course, to the offense, he said it all starts with Russ, how precise he is, how on it he is with audibles and play changes, that almost everything he changes works. He seems to always be in the right play. Yeah, the new guys were wild, and the current Seahawks are saying, yeah, this is just what he does. Now, they can get away with this against Atlanta again because their defense was suspect. But if you run up against some defenses that are a little stouter, then this might be a different proposition. And in most games, guys, frankly, yesterday, they either would have lost or that would have come down to the final seconds the way they played defensively. And they know they've got a lot of work to do. And always after game one, everyone makes these grand proclamations about what it means for an entire season. I was really surprised how poor in the back seven the Falcons were yesterday. Not in every NFL team, including New England on Sunday, it's going to be that poor.
Yeah, last 30 seconds, that's about all we've got. It seems like they came away pretty healthy. I don't remember seeing many injuries. Anything stand out?
Rasheem Green left the game in the first half with what the Seahawks said was a shoulder injury, but Carroll really downplayed it afterwards. I saw it from the press box and looking through the binoculars that Jamal Adams was holding his right arm, and it was bothering him in the first half after a tackle. He kind of was shaking and holding it for a series or two, but stayed in the game. The most damaging exit of the game might have been when Quandre Diggs went into the locker room for an unknown reason for one play in the third quarter, and they brought Lano Hill in to replace him at safety and base defense rather than Hill playing at dime. Hill had just made a play on a tight end in the previous series to end the series on a tackle, but then they sent Julio Jones. Great scheming by the Falcons. They saw that Diggs was out. They sent Julio Jones at his replacement, 44-yard catch. I mean, Quandre Diggs sprinted out of the tunnel onto the field, straight onto the field from the tunnel to get back in after that play. Lano Hill left injured after that play, but then came back in later. So they were relatively healthy coming out of that, but maybe no more bathroom breaks in the middle of a series for Quandre Diggs.
All right, man. Well, glad you're back safe, sound, healthy. What an experience,
knock on wood,
man.
On the healthy part, but thank you. Knock on wood on the healthy part, but thank you. We'll see you in the next days.
All right. Greg Bell, our Seahawks insider, joining us this morning. All right, get ready. It's coming up next. Hugh Millen's going to join us Monday morning, quarterback 2020 style. Starts next on Sports Radio 950.
On third down and six, pressure off the edge. Down goes Ryan. Guess who? Jamal Adams downhill.
Good morning and welcome in. It is Monday. It is the Monday after the first game of the Seahawks season. A 38-25 win over the Atlanta Falcons and with Monday after the first game of the regular season, you call in the quarterback. Yes, indeed. Monday morning quarterback is back here in 2020, and we've got all sorts of offensive questions to ask. Not offensive, but offensive questions to ask Hugh Millen before our time is up this morning. But we're going to start with that guy that you heard about in the highlight there, Jamal Adams, as we get ready to break this thing down. First and foremost, though, we welcome him in, the star of our Monday broadcast, Mr. Hugh Millen. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, guys. Good morning to you. Sorry, Bucky, to hear about all the issues facing the Oregonians down south, but the Seahawks sure gave us reason for a moment to be happy. So good on them, and yeah, it's good to at least be able to just talk ball, right? Given everything that's happened this year.
Yeah, no question, man. It is just heavy. It's just one layer too many, frankly. But we did get a little bit of a distraction yesterday, and I thought the play on the football field was good all day long. I was really entertained by everything that I saw. Let's go ahead and dive into this Seahawks matchup. And look, I know you're a quarterback, but we got to start with this Jamal Adams character. What a first impression from him, huh?
Well, I was astounded at just how impactful he was, and I think all Seahawks knew that he was going to look great in number 33 and be a great player. The only remaining question had been, well, was it worth everything they gave up for him? Well, if it was to be, and if it is to be worth all that, then he's going to have to be a guy that can tilt the field, which is difficult to do from the safety position, but if he can play like that, then certainly it was worth those picks, and he was remarkable. He, you know, there was a question about, you remember earlier in the summer about, I think they were saying back in New York that he's going to be bored. Jamal Adams is going to be bored out here because Seattle isn't going to know how to use him. Well, that'd be like, you know, I know everybody shoots threes in the NBA now, but years and years ago when they had the three, there weren't a lot of shots, and it'd be like saying, well, Steph Curry's going to be bored there because they're not going to let him shoot threes. Well, here's the deal. If you get Steph Curry, you're going to let him shoot threes, you know? And so they showcased his skill set. You saw all the blitzes coming off the edge. That necessitated a dime package where Lano Hill was playing so that they had six DBs. You know, they went from a team that everybody says, well, they never play nickel. Now they played a bunch of dime yesterday. So they're ready and willing to bring him off the edge. He plays like a linebacker with his mentality. Now he made some mistakes in the second play of the game, He had a gap there where they gave up, you know, a 15-yard gash, and he should have been in one gap over to help prevent that. There was a few mistakes, but he was so impactful, so his energy. And I could go on and on. I'm going to stop and let you have a transition here because I've got a lot more to say about this guy. But I would just say the versatility is that was the thing that struck me the most. He played free safety, the post safety, which is the Earl Thomas position. He played strong safety down. He came off the edge countless times. He was what's called in a buzz defense, where he was not the wide defender in the underneath, but he was the middle defender in the underneath. He just manned every spot you could possibly man, other than corners. But what a debut, and I think the energy as well. I think there's no question you could have just jumped off the field, the leadership that he was bringing. What a debut.
Hugh, I'm wondering, I mean, with a shortened offseason, so to speak, and his first game with the Seahawks, is there room for improvement with this guy? Because if he's going to get better over time, then we might have just found an absolute diamond.
Well, I tell you the play that probably made the biggest impact on me that he had. And it goes back to my study of him at the Jets. And, I cited about six or seven great attributes and three weaknesses. And one of them was when he's in the back end, he sometimes got lost on whether to play the ball or the man. So let me take you to what I believe was the fourth play of the game yesterday. It was second and 11. And by the way, the Seahawks have made an adjustment on the third play of the game that we got to talk about. But they're second and 11, and they line up Julio Jones in the slot to Matt Ryan's left, and they're in an empty backfield. And Seattle, because it's second 11, they're playing a too high defense. Right? Obviously, they're anticipating pass. So Jamal Adams is backed off, and the Falcons run a concept where they line up an empty. They've got three receivers to the right and two to the left for Matt Ryan. Well, in those type of two high defenses, the middle linebacker has to declare. He has to what we call push to the three receiver side. So they necessitate Bobby Wagner going over to Matt Ryan's left, the defense Matt Ryan's right rather, and the defense's left. And on the backside, they're running a concept. Now, what do you say a concept? When football people talk about concepts, you have pass routes. Those are individual routes, like a go route or a corner route or a dig route or a curl route. Concepts are two or more pass routes that work in conjunction. And the concept they were running was what's called a levels concept. It was Peyton Manning's favorite levels pass concept of all. And what it is, it's real simple to describe. It's not simple to defend. And it's a two-man concept where the inside receiver, called the slot, he's going to go down to about 12 yards, and he's going to break in on just an in route, a square in, okay? And then the outside receiver, he's going to run 5 to 6 yards, and then he's going to break in. And it's called levels because you have in-breaking routes, one at 12 yards, one at five by the inside guy, and one at 5 to 6. Now, it's difficult to defend against two-eye defenses because it essentially you're running away from the cornerback. So you can attack this defense and never have to attack their best defender. And Marvin Harrison caught a thousand of these things on those short in routes, and then also the slot route. So getting back to yesterday, so they get Bobby Wagner to go away from this. Now they got Julio Jones, and he's breaking in. And really what, as you teach a quarterback, it puts the inside linebacker adjacent to Bobby Wagner. You'd call him the wheel backer, but he's lined up inside. And in this case, it's KJ Wright. And you have a diagonal stretch on him. And so KJ Wright, he looks to go hunt up the outside route. Basically what they did by scheme is they match up Julio Jones on a 12-yard in route against Jamal Adams. And Jamal Adams is able to what we call rob the dig route. He drives on that dig route, doesn't get a pass interference, and he gets a pass defense and an incomplete. And he was able to fire his gun on maybe the best receiver in football right now, operating in the slot, with Atlanta having isolated him with a bunch, pulled Bobby Wagner out of there, so he had no zone help to the inside. He essentially had to defend Julio Jones on a three-way break. If Julio Jones would have gone vertical, Jamal Adams would have had to have him. He could have ran a corner out, maybe the corner, maybe he could have sank underneath that, but now he crosses his face. Jamal Adams had to cover Julio Jones in an entire meadow, and he was able to drive on that play. That might be too much detail, but I'm telling you guys that was an area I did not see from him in the Jets. So you asked Bucky, can he improve? And for him to be able to do all – we saw the aggression coming off the edge, and he plays like a linebacker, and he blitzes great and all that, and we can talk about that. But that play to be able to break down and stop the levels concept the way Atlanta had it constructed with maybe the best receiver in football, that was what impressed me the most. Because, man, this guy has versatility.
Well, I got a million questions to ask. And by the way, we got a million different topics to cover. So we're just getting started here with Monday Morning Quarterback with Hugh Millen. Obviously, a lot of meat on this bone, and we're going to feast today with the quarterback as we break down the Seahawks 38-25 win over the Atlanta Falcons to get the season started. But right now, we have no other choice but to play a little fact or fiction.
It's time for Fact.
Just a fact, Jack.
Or fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
It is a fact.
Sports Radio KJR brings you Fact or Fiction again this year, presented by the Emerald Queen Casino. For 13 weeks throughout the football season at four various points during our broadcast day, 7:35, 11:35, 2:35, and 3:35, listen in. One of our hosts is going to pick a game, and you will have a 12-minute window to text Fact or Fiction. If you agree, Fact. If you disagree with the pick, you text Fiction to 49451. You will be entered at that point for the chance to win $1,000, a weekly cash prize of $1,000, but you have to get a correct answer at some point during the week. The more you get correct, the better your chances of winning that $1,000. And of course, whoever gets the most accurate predictions this year will win $10,000, all thanks to the Emerald Queen Casino. People know how this works by now. How did we fare? I know I won. I won mine, but I was out last week, so I don't even know what your guys' picks were. How did we fare as a team yesterday?
The one I picked, I missed, because I had the Cowboys beating the Rams and covering 3.5. So
way to go.
Well, I thought
3, actually.
Oh, was it 3? Either way,
still tied,
either way, they didn't get there.
A loss, unfortunately.
Bucky, yeah. How did you do?
I got both of mine right. I got the
there we go.
-7.5 and
well, I think we figured the weakest link. I think we've sniffed out the weakest link already. Right. That didn't take long.
And it's going to be hosted by Jane Lynch.
So we're 3-1. That's not bad.
Yeah.
People ought to listen to us every once in a while. Think maybe we know what we're talking about. We get 75% right of our picks right, for goodness sake. All right. Well, it lands on me today. I'm making the selection today, as I got to, guess, play a little catch-up from missing 3 shows last week. And I will pick one of the games that's being played tonight. We can't pick tonight's games, right?
Yeah,
that is in play.
Yeah, we could do tonight's game. Sure.
Okay. All right. Making sure they're like under their unwritten rules. It's like baseball.
Right. No, we could do tonight's games tonight. Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm going to, and Bucky's not going to be happy about this, I am going to take the Tennessee Titans giving 3 to the Denver Broncos. Number one, the Broncos aren't going to get to enjoy their fans and that normal home field advantage that they thrive in so well. And then number two, I just happen to be a monstrous believer in the Tennessee Titans. Woo. I think they've got a legitimate shot of making it to the Super Bowl this year. And so I think the Tennessee Titans announced their presence with authority tonight, and they cover, not only win, but they cover the 3 points that they lay to the Denver Broncos. So that's my selection.
I like the selection. I think it's a good pick.
Yeah.
Broncos are probably going 0-16. So
wait to hear from the Bronco fan before.
That's coming from a guy that is 0-1 in his fantasy or fact or fiction pick. So we're not going to take his word for much, but I think it probably is a smart pick. I mean, Tennessee is a far better club than Denver is this year, and to only be given 3 is they're pretty lucky right there, I think. So good pick, Chuck.
All right, 49451, that's the text line, text fact. If you agree with me, text fiction. If you disagree with me, the Emerald Queen Casino, brand new facility, open on the I-5 in Tacoma. Go check it out when you get a chance. Thank you. Emerald Queen Casino, you are the best. Coming up next, more from Hugh Millen on yesterday's 38-25 win over the Atlanta Falcons. We got to talk more about Jamal Adams, and at some point, we got to talk about this offense. Sports Radio 950.
Your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle's original diehard sports station. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Chuck and Buck, Sports Radio 950 KJR. The Monday Morning Quarterback Show continues. Hugh Millen is with us as we broadcast from 4 different locations. Welcome to 2020. Well, at least the Seahawks start the 2020 football season with a win, 38-25 over the Atlanta Falcons. And Hugh, all of us impressed with Jamal Adams in his debut. Something that you said, Hugh, in our previous segment that I wanted to ask you a question about. Because, you know, this league is about adjustments in the National Football League. And when you're telling me how amazed you were about the versatility of Jamal Adams, how then do you adjust to him if you're the New England Patriots, if you don't ever know where he's going to line up on the field? What kind of an advantage does that give Pete Carroll to be able to take this weapon and move him around? And what kind of troubles does that give the next opponent for trying to prepare for this defense now with 33 out there?
Well, I think he's so aggressive coming off the edge. I think you're going to see a lot of times where teams are just going to audible run away from him. Aside from that, wherever he happens to line up, you just have a recognition that he's a great player. But I think that he poses the greatest threat when he's, you know, really attacking and trying to make plays behind the line of scrimmage, just in terms of the threat of from a scheme standpoint. Okay, we have to make an adjustment. Now he's really good. For example, he made a play against Todd Gurley. They threw a swing pass out to Matt Ryan's left, and you had Adams. He was just in what's called a curl flat zone, where there's a 3 deep, 4 under. He has his assignments would be defend the curl, then the flat, and with a nod to the wheel, if anybody would have a wheel in his zone. And so he just had to, he just came up in space, broke down, you know, attacked the shins of Gurley and got him on the ground. It was a hell of a play in open space. So you're just, I think as you prepare for him, you're just going to see that he's, you don't want to go to him. Right. I mean, if I'm a quarterback, yeah, if I'm studying, I would just have an awareness that he can make plays in space that other guys can't make. But, you know, there was that when we talk about the adjustments, this will be interesting because they're playing the Patriots and they're going to have a week to go to school on what Seattle presented. That Atlanta didn't have that luxury based on some of the defenses that Seattle presented to them. And so there will be a much greater advantage for Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, to be able to study this.
Yeah. We talked a lot going into this matchup about the dime coverage, how much it could change. We spent a lot of training camp discussing this. What did you think of the decisions that were made on how to go to that package?
Well, I think that if you're going to bring Adams off the edge, if you just say, okay, you start with a base defense, Jamal Adams is one of four defensive backs, right? You've got him as the strong safety. You got Quandre Diggs as your free safety. This is in a standard one-eye defense. You saw Quentin Dunbar start at the right corner. Maybe we could talk about him. And then, of course, you got Shaquille Griffin. Now, when you add the nickel, when you add one more guy, then you're going to bring in Marquise Blair. But if you're going to have such a propensity to blitz Jamal Adams, he's not part of the coverage in man or zone, right? So you put on nickel in, but really you haven't put on nickel. You've just replaced. You're back to four DBs that are defending the pass, right? And so now to really get into a nickel, if Jamal Adams is blitzing, you got to bring in another DB in Lano Hill. I thought it was a pretty good day for both Lano and Hill and Marquise Blair. There were some times where they were out of position, particularly in more obvious pass situations where they're playing too high and their responsibilities change underneath in terms of where their help is and where they need to be in their zone matchups. But I thought it was a good sign for Seattle that they are willing to put six DBs out there. I thought it was conspicuous that Amadi is not one of them. We'll see how that plays out, but I think it's a good sign. And then the other part of it, while we're talking about adjustments real quick, that third play of the game, Seattle played, here we're talking about the secondary, let me go up to the front, the defensive line. They played what's called a double eagle. A double eagle front is where you have the center covered and both guards. And you're taking, think of it like this. Defense taketh, defense giveth. If you understand from a pass sense, if you just said, let's break it down to short, intermediate, and deep. There's a lot of other ways you could break it down. But Seattle could stop whatever they want to stop. And any defense could stop. If you want to say we're going to stop the deep pass, you can put as many bodies up there to stop the deep pass or the short pass. Similarly with the run, if you want to say, oh, we're going to stop inside run, you just put a bunch of bodies in the inside run and nobody can run on the inside, or put everybody outside. You can take away whatever you want to take away. And so what Seattle did is when they went to that double eagle, they essentially said they got gashed for 8 yards on the first play, gashed for 15 yards on the second play. They said, we got a great secondary. We got a great back seven. We need to put more dudes in to stop the run. And we got to cover up their offensive linemen, create a five down look by, again, covering both the center and the guards, and then the ends are essentially on the outside edges of this tackle. So that double eagle, and they played a ton of that, played a ton of double eagles. So they are playing to their strength, which is that back seven, and they're fortifying the defensive line with one more guy. We haven't seen a lot of that from Seattle through the years.
Yeah, 38-25, Seahawks win over the Falcons. Much more to discuss with Hugh Millen. Don't forget, Coach is going to join us at 9 o'clock today, and we are going to recap the 8 top stories of the day, which will be heavily slanted toward the Seahawks win over the Falcons in the Ocho. That's coming up in a matter of minutes on Sports Radio 950.